Anyway, thank you, guys.
Should Americans be worried about inflation, sir?
Well, I really doubt that we're going to see an inflationary cycle.
And by the way, talk of inflation, the overwhelming consensus is going to pop up a little bit and then go back down.
I don't know anybody, including Larry Summers, who's a friend of mine, who's worried about inflation.
What's up, people? I'm Dave Rubin. This is The Rubin Report. It's July 28th, 2022. We're live streaming on Rumble, YouTube, and Blaze TV. Subscribe if you have not. And despite what the elderly man pretending to be president has said repeatedly over the last year, a recession is here. It was basically just announced this morning, although the machine, and you always have to watch out for the machine is currently trying to change the definition of recession. We got into this a little bit yesterday about what the technical definition of recession is, what the definition of recession has always been, and what the very same people who are now saying we're not in a recession were basically saying when, you know, Trump was president and we weren't in a recession, but they were kind of trying to pretend we were in a recession because they didn't like the orange man. Well, here we are. So we're going to be pointing out a lot of hypocrisy and nonsense and editing of words in real time, because that's what's happening across the internet and throughout this culture war that we find ourselves in. And we're going to frame today's show around an interview that I did a couple years ago that I'm guessing probably 90% of you have seen with economist Thomas Sowell. It's probably my favorite interview that I've ever done. And there's a lot of reasons for that, but I think sort of most importantly is that I tried to treat the interview as sort of a 101 for a lot of people who were just waking up out of leftist insanity, waking up to, oh, maybe there should be limited government, maybe regulation doesn't work, maybe these programs don't work. I was going through that evolution myself, and I think that's why so many people were appreciative of the interview. And the reason we're going to use that today as the frame or the framework is because it's not as if we couldn't have predicted that if you spend endlessly and you hamper the economy and you lock people down and you keep them out of jobs and all those things, it's not as if we couldn't have predicted that this was going to happen, because many people have been warning about it for a long time. So before we get to any of that, I have to talk to you about The View. Yeah, we got to do it. Sorry. A lot of you enjoyed yesterday's show, some of my language. Michael, you particularly enjoyed my language around the ladies of The View. I got a lot of texts yesterday, people that were watching it, like having lunch, like cracking up over some of the things that I said about those crazy harpies. But you know what happened. Basically, a couple days ago, Whoopi and the ladies of The View accused Turning Point at their student action summit, which I was at, and Ron DeSantis was at, and President Trump was at, and Greg Gutfeld was at, and plenty of other people were at, Charlie Kirk, of course. Which was all about freedom and laissez-faire economics and being proud of America and individual rights and all of that, you know, crazy far-right stuff. Whoopi accused them of embracing and welcoming in neo-Nazis on the show the other day. Then they went to commercial break. The lawyers obviously freaked out. Whoopi gave this very half-assed apology, saying that she meant it metaphorically, that they welcomed them in, not literally, which actually made no sense, and in some ways made it even worse that they were, because if you're metaphorically welcoming in Nazis, it's irrelevant whether you're welcoming into the building, you're sort of doing it with everything else that you got. You're doing it spiritually, which of course is complete nonsense. Turning Point was turning them away. The students were mocking them. Several of the speeches were making fun of those very same collectivist ideas. Anyway, the View really, really stepped in it, and it was the thing online yesterday. So then The View now has had to issue even a further apology, because Whoopi's metaphorical apology didn't quite cut it. Here is Sarah Haynes of The View trying to unstep in SHIT.
Everybody, and I have to stop talking because you have that note.
I do have a note. So on Monday, we talked about the fact that there were openly neo-Nazi demonstrators outside the Florida Student Action Summit of the Turning Point USA group. We want to make clear that these demonstrators were gathered outside the event and that they were not invited or endorsed by Turning Point USA. A Turning Point USA spokesman said the group quote, 100% condemns those ideologies, and said Turning Point USA security tried to remove the neo-Nazis from the area but could not because they were on public property. Also, Turning Point USA wanted us to clarify that this was a Turning Point USA summit and not a Republican Party event. So we apologize for anything we said that may have been unclear on these points.
They still invited Matt Gaetz, though, I would just like to know.
Just at the end there, they still invited Matt Gaetz. So are they going to have to issue another apology? Because the implication, of course, is that Matt Gaetz is a Nazi. Anyway, there's just something interesting about this. Just something interesting about these people who throw out these bombs. Oh, those people are Nazis and they're associated with you. And even if you have nothing to do with them, we're going to make these baseless accusations. We're going to tar all of you, make sure you're not invited to polite society. And then finally, what is starting to happen is people on the right are fighting back. It has taken a long time, but finally somebody at Turning Point obviously made a call to a lawyer, and one lawyer called another lawyer, and that lawyer over at ABC picked up the phone and said, uh-oh, we are in it if we don't issue another apology. So then there's another just half-assed, disingenuous apology, and of course, Whoopi didn't actually make the apology, nor Joy Behar, who implied that Ron DeSantis was working with the Nazis. I mean, it's all just silliness, nonsense, but I thought it was worth putting a cap on that after yesterday's big show. Anyway, today we are going to talk about the recession. That is not a recession if you're a Democrat who changes terms. Oh, by the way, Clyde's in studio. I said recession and he groaned. He hates recessions. That's the big thing with the dogs because they know the treats might disappear. Before we get to any of that though, real quick, guys, let me talk about Liquid IV. You know, the hot summer months are here in Miami, Florida, and David and I need to be proactive about keeping our bodies fueled and hydrated. Making hydration a priority can help us feel healthier in our everyday lives. One stick of Liquid IV, and I have many sticks right here, has in 16 ounces of water hydrates you 2 times faster and more efficiently than water alone. Plus, Liquid IV tastes great with 10 refreshing flavors like Concord Grape, Lemon Lime, Pina Colada, and Tropical Punch. Sounds like summer, doesn't it? I used Liquid IV last night after coming back from a Marlins game with the team. We went to the Marlins game again. We love the Marlins, big Marlins fans. I love how it makes me feel on a daily basis. Pina Colada is my personal favorite flavor. Grab your Liquid IV in bulk nationwide at Costco, or you can get 25% off when you go to liquidiv.com and use code Ruben at checkout. That's 25% off anything when you shop for better hydration. Today, use promo code Ruben at liquidiv.com. I've got the lemon lime in my hand right here. Okay. So let's frame today's show about the recession that is not a recession, except it is a recession, around some people who have been making sense, because it is not like none of us could have predicted this. It is not like there aren't economists who believe in reality, who have been trying to preach about this stuff for a long time, would be shocked at what has happened today with endless spending and all of that stuff. So let's flash back to an interview I did with Thomas Sowell. The brilliant Thomas Sowell. I don't even know how to intro him properly. Like, the brilliant economist Thomas Sowell, probably of all people in American culture today. Like, if there's one person that should be more well known for his good work, it is Thomas Sowell. Stanford professor. He is author of probably 20 or 25 books. I mean, there's just nothing you can say about the guy because you can say everything about him. This is Thomas Sowell on the Rubin Report discussing the U.S. government's perverse incentive with macroeconomics and why the endless spending and all that stuff kind of doesn't work. This is about 4 years ago. Take a look.
Then what was your wake up to what was wrong with that line of thinking?
Facts.
Well, you know, we could probably end the interview right there. Yeah, facts. Yeah, there you go.
And specifically, my first professional job, I was a summer intern at the U.S. Department of Labor. And I realized from dealing with these people that the U.S. Department of Labor, one of my biggest concerns was about minimum wages. It has been for a long time. And so at first I thought, well, this is good because all these people are poor and they'll get a little higher income, and so that'll be helpful. And then as I studied economics, I began to see, well, there's a downside. They may lose their jobs completely, so that is that. And so when I was at the Labor Department, I tried to talk about that to them. And eventually, I came up with some test of it, and When I came up with this test, how we might test this, I was waiting to hear congratulations, you see, that I had this. And I could see these people were stunned. They said, oh, this idiot has stumbled on something that will ruin us all.
Wow. You know?
And I realized the U.S. Department of Labor had its own agenda and interests. And that did not necessarily mean that whether poor people lost their jobs from minimum wages or got higher pay was their highest priority.
Yeah. How much longer did you last at the
department? No, that was really the turning point.
Yeah.
And then I began to see that all these government agencies and whatnot, they have their own institutional incentives. And you cannot say that the government will step in and do what's right for these people and whatnot, because they'll do what's right for themselves.
The interview goes for about an hour. If you haven't seen it, guys, let's link to it below if you haven't seen the full thing. But his anecdote there and the thesis that he's laying out, that these institutions, these government institutions, the swamp, as some people call it, they have their own agenda that often has very little to do with solving the problems that they purport to solve. So he goes in there as a lefty, as a government guy. He, moments before that, he was describing himself at that time as a Marxist. So he's a big government guy. He goes in, he finds out that these programs do not work. And basically everyone's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. We're in the government. We're not in the business of solving problems. We just want our endless budget to go up every year to do absolutely nothing and actually harm the people we're supposed to be helping. So that is the perfect jumping off point for what is going on with our leaders, what are we calling these people? Today, here is head of the Fed, Jerome Powell, announcing that the Fed has increased the interest rates. And do you think there might be a reason for that?
Good afternoon. My colleagues and I are strongly committed to bringing inflation back down, and we're moving expeditiously to do so. We have both the tools we need and the resolve it will take to restore price stability on behalf of American families and businesses. The economy and the country have been through a lot over the past 2.5 years and have proved resilient. It is essential that we bring inflation down to our 2% goal if we are to have a sustained period of strong labor market conditions that benefit all. From the standpoint of our congressional mandate to promote maximum employment and price stability, the current picture is plain to see. The labor market is extremely tight and inflation is much too high. Against this backdrop, today the FOMC raised its policy interest rate by 0.75 percentage point and anticipates that ongoing increases in the target range for the federal funds rate will be appropriate.
Okay, so if only any of us could have seen this coming. This is so shocking. Aren't you freaking out? What do you mean that there could be a problem with the economy? I mean, we printed all that money. We broke all those businesses. We destroyed all of those companies. We did all that stuff and we locked everyone in and all that. I can't believe that it would lead to this. I'm freaking out. It's very bizarre. Well, then what happened at officially 8:30 this morning, 8:30 Eastern time, it was announced that we had our second consecutive negative quarter of GDP in the U.S. economy. That has been the technical definition of a recession for probably 100 years, probably a century or so. That's what everyone has always said. We've got evidence of that. We'll show you in just a second. But not our people in charge right now. Here's black lesbian Karine Jean-Pierre. She is the White House press secretary. And she's telling Peter Doocy that the thing that we've always known is not really the thing.
If things are going so great, though, then why is it the White House officials are trying to redefine recession?
No, we're not redefining recession.
If we all understand a recession to be two consecutive quarters of negative GDP growth in a row, and then you have White House officials come up here to say, no, that's not what a recession is. It's something else. How is that not redefining recession?
Because that's not the definition. That is not the definition.
Brian Deese said in 2008, of course, economists have a technical definition, which is of a recession, which is two consecutive quarters of negative growth.
I can tell you this.
And yesterday he said two negative quarters of GDP growth is not the technical definition of a recession.
It is not. It is not.
Why did he say that?
It is not. I can speak to what he said yesterday in front of all of you, which is the last thing that you just repeated. There are many factors. There are many factors, economic factors and indicators to consider. And I will say that the textbook definition of recession is not two negative quarters of GDP.
Okay, so you know, she just lies. Like, they're so in the lies, it's all they can do. She never actually, we watched the full clip, she never actually explains then if it's not the common definition of two consecutive quarters of the GDP shrinking, that if that's not the definition of recession, what it is. But what's interesting that Peter Ducey, who is just fantastic, I mean, he really, out of all the people in the White House press corps, he's just doing a great job for Fox, and he's really the only one asking these direct questions. He brings up this guy, Brian Deese, who is Joe Biden's national economic, the head of the National Economic Council. He's the director. Here's the exact quote. This is what Ducey read, but I just thought it was worth showing you guys again. This is the guy that's in charge of the National Economic Council right now for Joe Biden. Well, what did he say back in March of 2008? Economists have a technical definition of recession, which is two consecutive quarters of negative growth. This is the guy who's in charge of the thing for the elderly man pretending to be president right now. He's also a BlackRock guy, but let's just, that's a little sidebar thing. But the point is that they are going to try to change the definition of words right now. These are the same people who try to change the definition of everything, right? Boys are girls, 2 + 2 = 5. You know, just being non-racist is actually being racist. And the rest of those things, and you can now watch, what's fascinating, this is where we're going to get to in a second, is now watching the entire machine just do it right in front of us. And this is what they do all the time. They do the magic trick right in front of us, even though we know how they're doing the magic trick, and yet a certain amount of people still get bamboozled by it. Real quick though, guys, I want to talk to you about Blaze socks. The Blaze has a limited release of fantastic socks just in time for the primaries and back to school shopping, guys. You've got Ron DeSantis riding an alligator with Big D energy. You could pretend that's Dave Rubin in a suit up there if you want to get that one riding an alligator with his Big D energy. That's what they say. People come up to me, Dave, you've got Big D energy. You can have Klaus Schwab doing his evil Darth Vader-like thing. You will eat the bugs. Joe Biden riding a car into hell. And many more people. Go to blazesocks.com before they're gone. You can use promo code BLAZESUB for 20% off your purchase if you're already a Blaze subscriber. So jump over there and get some socks. Keep your feet warm and fight for freedom. Okay, so I want to show you just how the machine operates. Because it's not just that they promote all of the bad ideas and that they hide the good ideas, right? It's like, why don't more people know about Thomas Sowell? It's because he was telling the truth for a long time, but the truth went against the narrative, so we just kind of hide him. But then we inflate these faux economists, these lefty economists who get everything wrong, guys like New York Times' Paul Krugman. We'll get to him in just a sec. But watch even what the places of journalism, air quotes journalism, watch what they do when it's their guy in power versus, say, when it's Orange Man in power. We've got two tweets here from Politico. This is just fantastic. Logan Hall came up with this. Over comparing the first one and the second one. So the first one, this is what they said yesterday about Joe Biden and the disastrous economy. Tomorrow we get the first possibly inaccurate and certain to be revised reading of U.S. economic performance in the second quarter of this deeply weird economic year. One metric to measure if we're in a recession. So you can see it's full of, you know, there's problems and it's not really his problems and it's a very weird year and, you know, we shouldn't really blame Joe Biden. Now what happened when Trump was president and things were actually going well? Things were actually going well. Here's what Politico said about Trump. Trump is expected to get a badly needed positive headline Thursday morning with a report expected to show the economy grew at a record pace in third quarters. But beneath the headline, the economic picture looks far less sunny. So do you get what they do there? When it was Donald Trump and things were going well, they're warning you that underneath the good things that are happening, bad things are happening. When it's Joe Biden and things are going poorly, they're telling you it's a weird time. So don't actually tell anyone that things aren't going well. Don't tell them that the house is about to fall on their head. These people can't deal with it. Here is Ben White. He is the chief economic correspondent, also for Politico. This is just spectacular. Like, I don't really care who this guy is, but it's just the way these people operate when it's their guys versus the other guys. So this is Ben White yesterday, chief economic correspondent at Politico. The White House is pretty obviously right that even two quarters of shrinking GDP would not show the economy is currently in recession. Getting people to understand that and the nuances of our strange, vexing economic movement is just really hard. by me. And here's his article. And then this guy, this is just fantastic. This guy, Jeff Billman, I don't know who this guy is. He just went into one of Morning Ben's tweets, one of his old articles, just from a couple months ago. This is literally from a month and a half ago. You wrote this in June. And here's exactly what he said. I'm sorry to report that conditions are ripe for a slide in gross domestic product growth that lasts at least two quarters, the technical definition of recession. You get it. You get it. The way the machine covers up for certain people and the way that they try to destroy the other set of people when they are doing good things. Here's Paul Krugman from the New York Times. This is a man who has gotten everything wrong ever for his entire life. So he's a perfect economist for the New York Times. He says, ignore the two-quarter rule. We might have a recession, but we aren't in one now. So he's telling you to not see what you can see right in front of your face. Just try to imagine if this was Orange Man or this was DeSantis or this was Pat Romney or any other Republican. Do you think the entire machine would be running around to redefine recession, or would they be telling you that the sky is falling? That the sky is falling. That's exactly what they would be telling you. Chicken Little and all of her friends would be dead right now. That's what they would be telling you. It's just incredible. But let's go full circle here. Remember that Brian Deese guy? Here he is on CNN. And let's contrast that with what I just read to you. He was saying back in 2008.
All signs are that this is a strong economy and the probability of a recession within the next year is not particularly elevated.
It's a strong economy and nothing about it suggests that it's close to or vulnerable to a recession.
I don't expect a recession.
No one is predicting a recession now.
We are not expecting that we are already in the recession. In fact, the guts and the bones of this economy remain strong.
These are not the marks of an economy in recession.
Right now, we don't see a recession right now. We're not in a recession right now.
This is not an economy that's in recession.
Not only is a recession not inevitable, but I think that a lot of people are underestimating those strengths and the resilience of the American economy.
We have a strong labor market, which you don't normally see in a recession.
A recession is broad-based weakness in the economy. We're not seeing that now.
In your view, is a recession in the United States inevitable?
No.
Typically, economists date a recession as being at least two quarters of negative growth and other factors, which we have not seen at all.
The idea that two quarters of negative GDP growth is a technical definition of a recession is wrong.
A common definition of recession is two negative quarters of GDP growth.
Two quarters of negative growth in a row, that's a recession.
Right, and certainly in terms of the technical definition, it's not a recession. The technical definition considers a much broader spectrum.
Okay, so that was obviously a compilation of a bunch of the people that are in this clown car contradicting themselves, redefining words and everything else. That was Brian Deese right at the end there. The same guy who gave us the technical definition, now saying it's not quite the technical definition. Let's not forget there's also Janet Yellen. She has hope that all hell isn't breaking loose. I mean, these are just completely incompetent buffoons, but you guys know I like that silver lining thing. People are waking up to it, and they're waking up to it bigly, as a certain Orange Man used to say. And we'll get to that in a second. Let me talk to you about NuGenix real quick. Do you want more energy to counter the negative effects of aging? NuGenix Total T Testosterone Booster with Testofen will help you turn back the clock, re-energize your workouts, and get you better results at the gym, and help you look and feel like the man you really want to be. NuGenix Total T contains man-boosting key ingredients like Testofen. It has been validated in 5 clinical studies, shown to boost free testosterone levels in men. Because NuGenix Total T boosts free testosterone that the aging process robs, you'll feel stronger, leaner, with more energy and drive and more passion too. Your partner will notice the difference. While every product professes quality, many other products use generic ingredients that are often far less than clinical grade. With NuGenix Total T, you get the same clinical potency levels used in the trials, and NuGenix formulation is backed by 10 years of science and research. NuGenix Total T is the number one selling testosterone booster at GNC, and you can get a complimentary bottle of NuGenix Total T when you text Ruben to 231-231. Text now and get a bottle of NuGenix Thermo, their most powerful fat incinerator ever, with key ingredients to help you get back into shape absolutely free. Text Ruben to 231-231. Text Ruben to 231-231. And now back to me. All right. So this is not going well for Joe Biden. And in that compilation we just showed you, they said, are we going into a recession? And while everyone else said a whole bunch of things, Joe just said no. Except the truth is, yes, we are in one. That's just how it is. This is just spectacular. So we found this is a throwback to the 2016 debate. Well, it was the 2016 election, so this is technically in 2015. The debate between Joseph R. Biden and Donald J. Trump. And, well, take a look.
If you're a middle-class family, you're getting hurt badly right now. You're sitting at the kitchen table this morning deciding, well, we can't get new tires, they're bald, because we have to wait another month or so.
Typical political statement.
Let's get off this China thing, and then he looks. The family, around the table, everything. Just right. A typical politician when I see that.
Let's talk
I'm
about North
I'm not a typical
Korea
politician.
Okay,
that's why I got elected. Come on, Joe, you can do better.
We're going to talk about...
I grew up with a family where when the price of gasoline went up at the pump, it was a conversation at the kitchen table with my dad. Where prices went up for things were daily requirements like the gallon of gasoline. It became a discussion at the kitchen table. It mattered.
You felt it. It was a discussion at the kitchen table.
You felt it. It was a discussion at the kitchen table. With on the kitchen table and...
Around your kitchen table. On our kitchen table.
Felt at the kitchen table.
Around the kitchen table.
And around our kitchen tables.
Around the kitchen table in the morning.
Feel it in your own lives around the kitchen table.
Talk about around your kitchen table. And I learned that at the kitchen table in Scranton. My dad used to say at the end of the day, it's just when you sit at that table, do you have enough money to pay for everything you need?
So isn't that just such a perfect explanation of what Thomas Sowell said at the top of the show, that these people have an agenda. They say certain things. We're here to help the little guy. We want to help minorities, et cetera, et cetera. We want people around the kitchen table to know that they're going to have food and all that. But it's their policies that take food off the kitchen table, that put more people into unemployment and hurt the bank statements and make you look when you get your check and you go, boy, I just gave that much more to the government and I got nothing for that money. So if he cared about any of these people, if he had paid attention perhaps at the kitchen table to some other things that he could have been reading or listening to or watching, maybe we'd be in better shape, but we ain't, and people get it. CNN now cannot hide it anymore. We've been showing you a bunch of these over the last couple weeks. The people do not like Joe Biden.
Tonight, 75%, the vast majority of Democrats, 3 out of 4, don't want Biden to be their nominee in 2024. That is according to a new CNN poll. Out front now, David Axelrod, former senior advisor to President Obama. David, I heard that and sort of stopped in my tracks for a second. 3/4 of Democrats don't want the incumbent president to run again. How worried should Biden be right now about that?
Well, I mean, obviously, this is a very unhappy bit of data for him. And I'm sure, you know, it is concerning.
Look, you got to remember, CNN does not want to run these things, right? They want to run cover for him. The last thing they want is a faltering, stammering, disastrous Joe Biden and a collapsing economy, which then could lead to the return of Donald Trump or to Ron DeSantis or any Republican or a red wave in the midterms, et cetera, et cetera. It's funny how they operate, of course. You know, that guy, David Axelrod there, he was an Obama senior aide, right? So it's like you're bringing on an Obama senior aide. Who was Obama's VP? Yeah, that was Joe Biden. So it's like you're already having like the insidious nature of all of this. This is exactly what the swamp is. You bring on a guy who kind of worked with the guy he's supposed to kind of criticize, but you know he also likes and doesn't want the other guy to win. It's just so awful. And I know you guys can see through it. It's easy enough. But it's not just that the average person, the average Democrat is just like Biden just ain't up to the task. Now, even the tacos, as Dr. Jill Biden calls them, the breakfast tacos, the delicious. What kind of breakfast taco do you like? Quick, let's do it again. You love the carne asada breakfast taco. Carne asada too? Breakfast taco.
Bean burrito.
You like a bean burrito? For Daphne, steak. That is also carne asada. Okay, we got a lot of red meat eaters in here. The point is the Democrats love their little breakfast tacos. They love thinking that they can give these people something, or that the Latino community, that the Hispanic community is just this monolith, that if you treat everyone the same, despite all the different countries they come from and all their different backgrounds and desires and all of those things, if we just pander to them in equal terms, we're going to keep getting these people to vote for us. And by the way, it has worked for a long time, but according to this new Quinnipiac poll, it ain't working much longer.
Democrats losing a huge, classically reliable base with a Latino vote. A new Quinnipiac poll finding that President Biden's support among Hispanics
is just 19% right now. Whoa.
Woo! 19%. For the record, I like the fish taco. Generally a grilled mahi-mahi or grouper, but also, you know, if it's fried, it's all right in a fish taco. Here's Joe Biden's response.
I just have one thing to say. Hang on here.
All right.
$81 million people, I'm told, voted for that pandering, disastrous buffoon. There he is. He's at some Hispanic conference, and he walks up there and plays Despacito. I like Despacito. It's just fine. Okay? But this is what they do. They think of you if you're watching this. Tú, if tú or usted is watching this right now, what they think you are is just a little piece on a chessboard that they can move around and give you just little crumbs, and that you will always vote for them. But it's not working anymore. And it's really, it's actually quite spectacular how it's collapsing so quickly. Then we came up, we saw this video yesterday. This one was going around online. And look, there is something going on with Biden. And as I often say, it's like, I can make fun of the guy and all of that stuff. And the media can keep running, you know, running cover for him and carrying water for him and all that. But something is seriously going on with him. So somebody put together this compilation. What you're about to see here, it's about a 30-second video where they're going to go back and forth. This is Joe Biden on the same day. Both of these videos you're about to see are on the same day. Do you think something is going on with him? Note his face, his tone, eyes. Just watch this. This is two videos from the same day. Same day. You get the point? Same day. Same day.
Folks, as we fight inflation, you can't be pro-insurrection and pro-cop. Bringing down gas prices is a big part of the job. You can't be pro-insurrection and pro-democracy. You can't be pro-insurrection and pro-American. And here's the good news. Gas prices have dropped every day this summer. That's more than 40 days in a row. Donald Trump lacked the courage to act. We now have 40,000 gas stations in the United States where the price of gas is $3.99 or less. The brave women and men in blue all across this nation should never forget that.
I mean, if that doesn't freak you out, I don't know what will. You like, is he a synthetic humanoid that is breaking down? Like, if he got a little too close to heat, it would melt and you'd see the Terminator robot beneath. The eyes that are like this, that he can't blink. The voice that's different. Like, what are they drugging him with? What is going on here? It is a conspiracy in front of all of our faces. I'm sorry. It just is. The conspiracy is the non-conspiracy, right? Because there is a conspiracy, but that's not even the interesting part. Like, there is a conspiracy that they are drugging him and something's not right with him and a whole bunch of people know it. The conspiracy is that no one will talk about it, honestly. That's really what it is. But I still think, like, it really could take down all of these people. All of these people who know it, from Dr. Jill to Kamala to everybody else. Like, they're in dereliction of their duty, which is to defend the Constitution of the United States. And if the man in charge is losing his mind and cannot blink, and doesn't know where he is or whatever else is going on there, then these people are just not very good at what they're supposed to do. But let's go full circle. Look, the point is that the guy in the administration and the Dems are losing. The agenda's not working. It's hurting Americans. We all know it. We all know it. And then we thought this would be interesting because we've obviously referenced Thomas Sowell today and that elderly man pretending to be president. He's always sort of been a buffoon. And in 1987, Thomas Sowell, who at the time was an economist at Stanford, he was doing a Senate hearing, and they were talking about racism, sort of systemic racism, before the phrase systemic racism was cool. Oh, this was during the Robert Bork hearings also. This is during the Robert Bork hearings, and then it got sort of sidetracked by some stuff about racism. And listen to what a pandering buffoon Joe Biden is as he talks to one of the brightest economists in the country, who happens to be a black man. And listen to how just great Thomas Sowell is. It's just fantastic.
How about literacy test? Was it judicial?
I see no reason why people shouldn't be literate in order to vote. The question is, if you have a black who comes in with his degree from Harvard and the man behind the desk says, no, you're not literate, you can't vote, then this is what bothers me. People are talking about how judges should be sensitive to this particular group or that particular group. And if that means anything, if it means he's applying the law differently, that's precisely how blacks were held down for generations in the South.
So
literacy, applying the law differently.
Yeah, you get it. Thomas Sowell right there, then and there. This is almost 40 years ago. Just full-on assault on identity politics. Before we all fully knew what identity politics was, before we knew how it was going to leak into everything. And of course, Biden is somehow trying to make it seem that if he's for these literacy tests, that somehow Thomas Sowell is the racist there. So it's a clash of ideologies that's been going on for a really, really long time. But Biden's agenda, whether it was his agenda back in 87 to make it seem like Thomas Sowell is a racist, or whether it was his economic agenda right now, which is clearly destroying the economy, and my personal belief is that it's intentional, it just ain't working, and a lot of people are waking up to it. So I want to finish up with a little more Thomas Sowell here, because I thought this was interesting. I asked him about my awakening and what people need to do today.
So I think a lot of people watching this, and I know because I've been so open about my own sort of awakening, are going through this right now. They're realizing that the things that they've been taught for so long are not the truth and are not based in fact. When that happened to you and you started telling other people, not just the people you were working with, be it family or friends, what kind of pushback did you get? Because it was sort of radical ideas in a way that you were talking about then.
Well, I didn't feel any need to do a lot of proselytizing. It was enough for me that that I was now beginning to understand things I hadn't understood before.
I love that. He was beginning to understand things. That's what's happening across the country. I really think that is like the little red pill that's being doled out amongst people right now. A lot of people that didn't really care about politics, that weren't in this culture war, they're starting to see things a little bit differently. They're starting to think about things a little bit differently. They're starting to go, hey, you know, all these years after lockdowns and everything, maybe the government really isn't looking out for me. And then you see cultural icons start testing the waters. Guys like Joe Rogan, who was a Bernie supporter, suddenly saying he could vote for DeSantis. Guys like Elon Musk, who has only voted for Democrats, according to him, his entire life, saying he could support Ron DeSantis. Elon Musk was an Obama supporter. So I think the evolution that many of you probably did a couple of years ago, or maybe you did it alongside me, or maybe you're new to it, I think that is now being exported across the country. And Thomas Sowell's words there of like, yeah, I just kind of knew what it was. I didn't need to proselytize about it. I just needed to think clearly about things, and then the rest kind of fell back into place. It makes a lot of sense. And speaking of make sense, let me throw you one more clip from that interview with Sowell, because there is a way to get this country back on track, ladies and gentlemen.
Really, what we need more than anything else, perhaps, is common decency.
Yes.
And we've kind of lost that.
It isn't common anymore. I mean, when I was going to school and we'd have fights on the schoolyard grounds, when one guy was clearly beaten, whoever was the toughest kid in the crowd would simply step in and stop it. Yeah. And the other guys would say, you want to fight? You can fight me. You know.
That's what we need in the public square now.
Yes. But the police, there's only so much the police can do. If you don't have common decency, the cops are not going to be able to handle it. People can't be knowledgeable about everything, but they can be knowledgeable about the extent of their own ignorance, even if they have PhDs.
He's just so good. I'll make you a deal on the common decency thing. Now, yesterday, I'll have to go into the record here for just a second. I believe I called the ladies of The View a bunch of crazy bitches. Was that the direct quote? Wait, I got it there? Okay. Now, I did that because they unjustly called me and a bunch of people that were at Turning Point Nazis, in effect, right? So I'll make you a deal if you're a producer over at The View and you're watching this program right now, because you probably are, actually, because I know The View is on right now, but you can't be watching that, so you're probably sitting in the control room watching this thing. If you guys stop calling everyone Nazis, if you stop calling everyone bigots and transphobes and all of the other horrible things you call everybody, we'll ease up too, right? There is a way off this train, right? The crazy train. And the crazy train's going to Crazy Town. And the problem with Crazy Town is not only Crazy Town crazy, but there's a big freaking ditch before it. And we could all end up in that ditch together. So I will do my best to add a little more common decency to some of these things. But I also will mock the hell out of you guys if you can't stop. And I don't think you can stop, but I will do my best. If you try, if you put a hand out, I too will put a hand out. We got a cold close for you in just a moment. Do we have any comments from the Rubin Report community today? I think we're having some kind of technical. I'm getting the 1 second sign. I'll keep talking for just a second. I really think that that's it, right? Like the common decency thing, like you can put your hand out there. You can say to people, hey, I'm here for you.
let's not burn everything down. If they want to burn everything down, that's on them. But as Sol said, it's like, if you understand yourself, if you understand your mind, you won't be so hysterical. That's partly why these lefties are so consistently hysterical. Okay, I think we've got a couple comments here from the Rubin Report Locals community. Jeff says, now Thomas Sowell is a great example of an old guy that has all the marbles, contrasted with Joe, who has lost all and doesn't even pretend to look for them. You know, that's a great point. I'm glad you brought that up, because, you know, when I say these things about Biden, it is not, and I've repeatedly made this point, it is not to mock him over age. Thomas Sowell, I think, is now 91 or 92 years old. That interview was 2 or 3 years ago. Maybe it was 4 years ago if it was that long. Man, it's been a fast couple of years. But the point is, he was in his late 80s, one way or another, and he was still sharp and clear and cogent, and I would have basic complete confidence that he could be president and in a functioning way. Probably not ideal, because at 80-something years old, you're a little more tired. You do lose some of the mental sharpness, like all of that stuff. Maybe you don't want the 4 a.m. phone call. But that's why this stuff with Biden, this isn't about age. It's about cognitive decline. And that's just the truth. Jeannie says, recession, woman, racist. They all changed their meanings 5 minutes ago. Right. We were watching them do with the word recession what they did to the word woman, right? Nobody knows what a woman is anymore. I'm not a biologist. And what they've done to many, racist, bigot, all of these things, they mean people who disagree with me. So we watch them do it in real time, which is why I always try to call back to some of the things that have happened in the past so that we don't forget. Tony says, I really hope that all these defamation lawsuits are putting the squeeze on these media organizations. Yeah, you know, it's like, I'm a free speech guy, obviously, right? And the First Amendment protects our speech, and we have these very, very rarely used exceptions to it, meaning you can't directly threaten somebody. I'm gonna come to your house and shoot you. You can't do that, right? We have these laws around libel and slander that are very rarely used because they purposely wrote them to be so tight that it would maximize the amount of free speech. But at some point, if you knowingly are abject lying, as Whoopi did, she knew that she didn't know what she was saying. But she knew the turning point must be bad guys because they're not like her. And if you knowingly continue to go ahead and slander and libel these people, whether it's verbally or it's written word, whatever it might be, eventually you got to start threatening back. You got to start punching back. And that's exactly what Turning Point did. And that's how they got the apology. And look, I don't know that the apology ever, you know, does anything, right? The bomb was already thrown out there. The View audience already, but we've already associated Turning Point with Nazis. So the apology, you know, how many people watch the apology or pay attention to that? I don't know. But again, silver lining, people are not paying attention to this stuff. Ladies and gentlemen, tomorrow is a big day. Tomorrow is my last show before I go off the grid for August. We're going to do like a 2-hour live stream here. It's going to be part Q&A. We'll make some announcements, whole bunch more. We're going to go through some of my favorite clips in this past year since I got back on the grid last September. Talk a little bit about the move to Florida and all of those things. And then I'm going to do an exclusive drinks. I'm going to be drinking some tequila, maybe some other stuff with the fine folks at Local. So if you want to join us, we're going to do a separate live stream for you guys where we'll do a Q&A and all that good stuff at rubinreport.locals.com. That'll be a little bit later in the day. It's 5 o'clock somewhere. We'll make it work, people. But we will be here live normal time, 11 a.m. Eastern tomorrow for the big goodbye live stream. And then I disappear. No phone, no Twitter, no Facebook, no Instagram, no television, no news, no Stelter, no Acosta, no none of it. And we see what happens. So, and I know a whole bunch of you have been messaging me on Locals that you're going to do some version of your own kind of off the grid, whether it's weekends or a couple days or just not checking social media, even if you're checking emails, et cetera, et cetera. So the fact that I've maybe helped some people enter that world just a little bit is pretty awesome. All right, we got a cold close for you. See you tomorrow, everybody.
Today, 15 recipients of the Nobel Prize in Economics released a letter in support of the president's Build Back Better plan and his economic agenda to support the middle class,
including 4 Nobel Prize winners recently highlighted in an open letter.
Is to highlight the fact that it's not just us, but it is a range of economists. It's 17 Nobel laureates who have conveyed this will help address inflation.
13.
14 Nobel laureates in economics said it'll actually bring down the cost, it will reduce the deficit, and it was totally paid for, and it's going to reduce inflation. I don't know if it's been handed out today, but by the way, 15 Nobel laureates in economics released a letter yesterday. 17 Nobel Prize winners in economics have said, spontaneously wrote together, and 14 Nobel laureates in economics wrote to me telling me that it would also diminish the impact of inflation. The Nobel, 17 Nobel winners of the economics have written a letter just about 3 weeks ago to me affirming that this bill would ease long-term inflationary pressures. And this is from 15 Nobel laureates in economics. Quote, because this agenda, the one I'm talking about, mine, and I told you about the impact of 17 Nobel laureates saying it's going to decrease inflation, not increase it.
Thank you guys for tuning into the Rubin Report Direct Message.